5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome into Ruthless Aggression. I am Pierce. Rob and Chris are here with me also. It is Extreme Rules Monday. We'll predict the pay-per-view, all six matches as it stands right now. We'll see what else gets added on throughout the week. We'll also go back and talk about the post Unforgiven week in the year 2006, which to be a very hurtful week if you are one hardcore Holly. What are you guys thinking about this pay-per-view? Because I've seen superlatives thrown out like this is the best non-Big Four pay-per-view card we've seen in a while. I think they've loaded this up with really good, you know, I don't want to say unimportant because you do have two women's championship matches on the card, but you filled up with a lot of good non-main event storylines to where this is a kind of a cohesive pay-per-view, wouldn't you think? Even if it's missing like the main character.
No, I'm kind of with them, to be honest with you. Like, you know, I've been high on their pay-per-views for most of the year. That's kind of been the theme, even when the TV wasn't good, you know, for the first half of the year. But the pay-per-views have really delivered for the most part, and it's been, you know, 3 months now since we had one that wasn't in a stadium. So it's kind of hard to remember, you know, this is what it's like when it's not in a stadium. You know, Roman's not there. They kind of give a WWF in your house sort of vibe, and it works. I mean, it's a good show. I think there's no clear main event, which makes it interesting, I think, too.
Agreed.
Agreed. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. It's six matches that all look pretty good. I mean, they're, might be one or two more added along the way, but yeah, just where we're at right now, it's pretty good. It's on Saturday now. All the pay-per-views are on Saturday, so it's hard to complain about too much, really.
You know, I think with this card, I think it's a funny little bit that after doing one Extreme Rules match last year and after kind of letting it get away from them for a little while there, I would probably say every match has a stipulation.
Yeah, that's
and cool. I think that
wasn't that how it was at the beginning of Extreme Rules?
It was.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, every match would have some sort of stipulation or gimmick attached to it. The women, you would usually get like a battle royal or whatever, or they would be not treated that way, but whatever. We won't talk about pre-2015 women's division stuff here unless we have to. But yeah, I think the good thing about all these matches is that a lot of them really don't run into each other in terms of what's going to be provided. Because, the Donnybrook, that might have like a street fight, Extreme Rules vibe to it, but with the people involved in it and the fact that it's a six-man, it's going to be a little condensed.
Yeah.
The I Quit match is going to be pretty violent, I imagine. Going to be some good story there. Fight Pit, it's different. It's in a cage. Daniel Cormier is the special guest referee. That's a nice little added element.
That's pretty cool.
The ladder match should be really fun. It's the first one-on-one women's ladder match in WWE main roster history.
First one-on-one ladder match in main roster in a while in the first place.
A really long time. Yeah, it has been a really long time since
the last one-on-one ladder
match. Yeah, like not TLC or anything.
Probably, it definitely had to happen in NXT. That's why I don't remember it.
Oh, yeah, NXT did a bunch of them.
NXT does a bunch of ladder matches all the time.
They might not have had one since the last Rey and Andrade on Raw.
Well, I was going to say. They did Sammy, Jeff Hardy, and AJ Styles, but that was a triple threat. Yeah.
Did they do one with Trouble Lee? Cameron Grimes.
It did Seth,
yeah, they did.
Finn, KO, and Rey in a fatal four-way last October.
I think it's Andrade and Rey was the last one-on-one.
Yeah, Andrade and Rey is the last one from January 20th for the United States title.
Was it not like Trevor Grimes and LA Knight for the $1 million championship or something like that?
Yeah, they did that one too.
Yeah. Well, that's for NXT.
NXT has done them a lot because Sean. Yeah,
NXT's done them.
Sean does them all
the time, yeah. The last one-on-one in general was Grimes versus Knight for the $1 million title, and that was last June. So it's not a stipulation that they really dole out a lot.
Yeah.
Liv Ronda Extreme Rules looks good. The way that they've built it has been good.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean the strap match even with Cross and Drew should be pretty violent. I don't like that they're doing pinfall and submission for that. I think they could have protected both guys and did both of them a favor by making it the corner game.
Yeah.
I think that would have been a more fun way of getting from point A to point B.
We talked about that a little bit. Like maybe that's where the, you know, White Rabbit stuff comes to a head.
But also
how you end the match. But yeah, I don't want to see him work with those guys either though. Well, so, yeah.
But
you know.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Anyways, I really like this card. I really think they're going to deliver a fun show for Philadelphia on Saturday. Let's get to predicting.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's start with that match. It's Matt Riddle and Seth freaking Rollins in a fight pit. And kudos for WWE for making the call. Triple H, I'm assuming, made that call out to Daniel Cormier, who I don't think has done anything yet with WWE, which is considering how huge of a fan he is.
Exactly,
They've tried to get him for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Even they wanted to do, like, Brock against Cormier, which probably would have had some WWE involvement in the promoting and all that,
yeah.
Which would have been a really bad idea in UFC, but in WWE, if that's a path they want to take, it could still be good. So we'll have to see if they go that route or what. But, yeah, it's exciting that he's involved. It'd be cool if he even did some SmackDown commentating for a little bit. If he's going to be there for the long haul, you know, replace Corey Graves or even just
give Corey a break.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be an interesting call depending on, you know, his UFC obligations. I feel like every now and then there's a fucking pay-per-view for him to do. But that would be if you're looking for like a marquee get to replace Pat McAfee on commentary on SmackDown. Daniel Cormier would be the one. You know he can do it. You know he can commentate. You know he is a fan. You're in this age of professional wrestling that's like straying away from what it was under Vince.
Mm-hmm.
So like Cormier is going to be the one that's going to call out, you know, storyline continuity or, you know, match moves and shit like that and little tidbits and trinkets that motherfuckers probably wouldn't know about. Like you need that guy. That guy is so vital. Out of a color commentary. Remember, or maybe you don't, mid-90s, of course, mid-90s sucked, but you had Vince, you had King, and JR was the third man.
Yes.
Kind of like on Nitro, where you had Tony Schiavone, you had Bobby the Brain Heenan, and you had Mike Tenay. That third guy was always so valuable because that third guy provided context.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Much needed context around what we're watching. We don't get that out of, you know, these three-man teams now. I feel like Daniel Cormier could be a guy that could provide that.
Yeah, and plus even just from, you know, just even this perspective, aside from Byron and even Booker before, they haven't had many black personalities being color commentator roles before. Percy Watson as well. So even that would be like a, you know, a welcome addition to the fray there, especially considering how dominated it's been by white men for however long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that'd be cool.
As far as the match goes, I think Riddle is going to kick Seth's ass.
I do.
I personally know Seth just got his big pay-per-view win, but this seems set up for Riddle to give him what he kind of deserves at this point for being an asshole. I think ultimately though, it depends on what the next direction for this is going to be. Is there going to be a third match? If so, Riddle should obviously win. If there's not, it could go either way.
I mean, it feels like
I feel like they're going to set something up for Crown Jewel.
Yeah, because they're going to get Crown Jewel out of the way, and then you have to figure one of them would factor into a War Games.
I would imagine it would probably be Riddle, or it could be both.
They're building like an all-star team to go against the Bloodline, which I think they're going to do.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I think that Seth won the regular match. That's what he's best at. Riddle is going to win the match that he is more well-versed at. And then,
like, how do you blow it off? Are they going to do Hell in a Cell again? And
sure.
Yeah, but they just did that with Seth last year.
I mean, sure, but I mean, that concept has obviously been utilized however many times. But also, there's other ways. I mean, they could do, okay.
Let's say I don't necessarily think you need to fight Pitt.
When was the last time they did Last Man Standing?
I was going to feel like
SummerSlam.
Right? Oh, yeah, that's right. Duh.
I quit.
Duh.
Yeah, I mean, they're
well, they're doing I Quit then. I mean, well, there's...
Oh, God damn it.
Either way, I think that... I think it was purposeful for Seth to win the straight-up wrestling match, and it's going to be purposeful for Riddle to win the fight match.
That... We can do first blood matches again.
Oh,
that'd be interesting.
I would be down for that.
Or they'll just go, like, Iron Man or something.
They haven't done... Hey, listen, they haven't done an Iron Man match
ever. Do that shit on Raw. Or there, you have an hour to do it. I don't.
Yeah, but if you do it in Saudi Arabia,
you can do a half hour.
If you do it in Saudi Arabia, you're not going to get the fans like.
Oh, well, yeah, there's that too.
Stuff and
yeah, exactly.
Iron Man match.
Exactly.
Iron Man match could definitely work for me.
So
actually, to be honest with you, we can get to the next one that I think could play into that. But let's yeah. But either way,
yeah, I think Riddle's probably going to win.
Riddle will probably win.
Do we see the Fiend here or any of Bray's?
Well, he's definitely teasing something with Philly, because I saw someone pointed this out. He had some sort of thing that started with where the first letter in every word was Bel Air, and people were immediately thinking, oh, must be Alexa targeting Bianca. Well, yeah, but remember where the Fresh Prince of Bel Air was from?
No,
yeah, West Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So he's definitely doing his usual targeting there. I think he's probably going to show up. I just can't tell you where.
Yeah, it feels like the show is definitely what would make sense. It might be clear, you know, after.
It could be tonight. Clear tonight. It could be clear after Friday. It also will probably be clear as the match card plays itself out. Because I think with a guy like
after the Seth interview with Iroh Helwani, I think that was very, because you don't do that. You don't do that question and that response if there's not a meaning to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where my mind immediately went to. So I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Because it was a very detailed, very thoughtful answer. And it was a very specific question that Ariel threw out, you know, about, you know, what's still a sour taste in a lot of people's mouth 3 years ago with that, that program and how it all played out. And I do think that, like, that was the beginning of the end for the Fiend character. It was the beginning of the end for Seth as a babyface.
Yeah.
And there's no better person, if Bray is going to come back, to torment, to terrorize, than Seth Rollins. So
yes,
I think you do see him Saturday. I think all of the signs have pointed that way.
Yes, agreed.
And that's why I'm going with Matt Riddle in a really tough, hard fought match. And this is a match that kind of protects, you know, whatever outcome there is, which is why I think this would be the probable outcome, is that now Riddle gets his big dub. He goes off and does whatever. Seth loses by way of new man coming in, which makes complete sense.
Yeah.
And then, hey, we get to see David Corbin in a wrestling ring, which is pretty fucking cool. So, what say you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I can see all that. Like, I still think it might just get a blow off of Crown Jewel, but, like, at the same time, because I don't know that they'd go, like, immediately to Seth and Bray, because I think Bray's going to be on SmackDown. Well, I don't know, though.
You don't know. You might
more like the promo shit on Raw.
Yeah, that's fair. He might just jump between or whatever, like guys do.
I was gonna say, doesn't matter anymore. That's another thing I wanted to like really play up. And I know Friday had its circumstances, but I really do feel like there's no need for brand split anymore.
Well, if you're going to have, you know, only one set of tag titles and only one, you know, main title, then yeah, I mean, it kind of, the thing is,
well, like, that's just for the men. The women just, don't, well, get, yeah, the women exactly. don't get those kinds of.
Yes. But I think the thing benefits. Is you need, you know, Roman to show up on Raw, which is going to next week. Like if you're
going to, but that's only because it's the season premiere. Yeah. He only shows up every now and then. He'll probably show up at, on the way to Survivor Series at the very least.
Yeah. So like you'd get rid of the brand split if he was going to be on both shows every week, but like, it's tough. And I don't care when people jump over, whatever, it kind of is what it is.
No, I honestly, I'm fine with a loose brand split where certain people, you know, just.
I wish it was more strict enforcement or didn't exist. I don't really like the middle ground is my problem.
I like the middle ground mostly because of the usage of the women. If the women were floating around like the men do, then I'd say, okay, end it. But they're still constricting them a little too much. So it's like, and they're also, to be fair, they are constricting the mid-card champions as well.
Yeah.
So it's mainly just the cast of like, because who is it really? It's the Bloodline, Damage Control, only because they're the tag champions.
Yeah.
But Bayley's their leader, so she's been around.
I mean, Theory was.
Gable, Theory is Money in the Bank.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Alpha Academy, the Street Profits. These people do, to be fair, have a higher pecking order on the card.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I see both vantage points. Yeah. I wouldn't care if it was strictly enforced. Frankly, at this point, I also wouldn't care if it was just tossed away, but they would just have to be careful.
Yeah.
What I think is either the co-main or it's your opener. It's your ladder match for the Raw Women's Championships. Bianca Belair defending the strap against Bayley a mere 17 months after this match should have taken place initially. But Bayley busted up her knee and ended up pushing it back all this way. I'm going to yield the start of these questions to the Bayley stan and the roommate of the Bayley stan. Where do you guys go with this championship match?
For the purpose of me being a fan, I will obviously be rooting for Bayley, for her to win. For this match, I think I need to see what happens in the contract signing this evening on Raw to get a general idea of what direction they might go. Even though that old trope of, oh, person stands tall on the go home, they're going to lose, it's kind of sort of faded. So it's not really that much of a consistent thing anymore. My thing with this is I think they have to be somewhat careful. And I say that only because they made a good decision, by the way, making this a ladder match, because now both of them can be protected. Neither of them need to be getting pinned in you know, roundabout succession like that, back to back, or even Bayley's first big match. She doesn't need to get pinned. So that's a good move. For this, though, it's sort of like if you don't change the title now, you have to almost have to at Crown Jewel because you're not doing it at War Games. Because then it's like, okay, what's the point of then continuing this feud if Bayley's not going to win the title? Mm-hmm. I think you can afford to switch the title for like 2 or 3 months, have Bayley lose it going into the Rumble or after the Rumble or whatever, find a good path for her, get her a good non-title match and keep going. But I just think that like, I don't know what the benefit of a Bianca win here is. I can obviously see it for when she had to beat Becky, when she had to win at Mania, when she obviously had to win her first few defenses. I think you have to insert some struggle for her. So I wouldn't necessarily, I obviously wouldn't mind if they did a title switch here. I also think that Candace is going to be in play in this match. I think it was purposeful. By design, her being, quote unquote, in the middle of the two factions last week in their backstage segment. And I honestly think if you had to ask me how I would predict this outcome, chaos at the end with Alexa, Asuka, Dakota, and Io, a lot of carnage. Bianca goes up. Candace tips the ladder over, officially turns with Bayley, helps her win. Damage Control is up to 4. So now the babyface needs to work together to get them down because they're assembling and getting stronger.
Yeah.
That's my thought on the
match. Yeah, no, I could see that. You know, it's interesting because if it wasn't a ladder match, it would be kind of weird for Bayley to just win, you know, first match. But like in the case of a ladder match, it's not, you know, that crazy. to have happen. So yeah, I think I'm gonna go with Bayley. You know, Bianca's been champion since Mania, and she's done a good job with it. You know, just I don't know how much further you need to go with it.
It's really. because it's sort of like they're in a time period right now where it's October.
Mm-hmm.
You're not gonna be having it defended in November.
Yeah,
you're if you have it defended in December, it's gonna be on TV. Then it's day one, and then it's Rumble. You're asking a lot of time for what's going to end up being a long term feud between Bianca and Damage Control without the babyface really facing adversity if she doesn't drop the title at some point. So that's where I think that it wouldn't, it's sort of setting up for her to lose the title. And, but it's sort of like you just pointed out, you know, she's been champion for a while. It's sort of like what they could have done with Roman and KO back in 2021 or 2020, whatever. They hold, they give KO the title for like a month or two. They give Roman, they could have given a Roman back. It wouldn't have mattered.
Mm-hmm.
In the same case here where she's been champion for 6 months, if they flip it for 2 or 3 months, she didn't take a pin. It is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really the thing. Like, that's why it would be fine. I mean, but we'll see. I'm going to go with Bayley, though, I think.
See, Chris, I agree with the direction where everything is going. I just don't think it's happening right now.
That's
fair. I don't think you do it yet because Candace has only been here for one, about to be two Raws. This crowd don't know her like that yet. And I ain't sitting here and listening to a crowd from, what was it, Calgary last week? Or Edmonton? I think it was
Edmonton. Yeah, it was Edmonton.
And, you know, it was really nice. And I think it was a surprise of a pop for Edmonton, right? But I do think there's some establishing that needs to be done before you just go ahead and flip her and throw her in there.
Yeah, but like that particular wrinkle can definitely wait.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially for a ladder match. Like, I think if Bayley's going to win the belt and get it off of Bianca, it would fly over a whole hell of a lot well and better if it's not a gimmicky match. If it is a pinfall, you know, like, I don't necessarily subscribe to the whole, oh, the face can't take a pin. No, the face needs to take that pin. You know, the face needs to take that pin, maybe not clean sometimes. And if Candace is going to be involved in it, it definitely would not be clean. But I'd rather see that kind of finish if we got a clean pinfall, not Bayley climbs up the ladder, takes the belt, and that's the champion. It just, it doesn't hit the same to me. I think it will make Bayley a lot stronger. And I think we'll put more emphasis on the chase on Bianca's end coming back. So I'm going to go with Bianca. In this, I do think we see crazy shenanigans and a lot of violence. It's going to be fun.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Really fun. And that's why I think they open. Because that's a nice feud and a hot start for the
crowd. It could open.
I definitely do think like the flip will come at Crown Jewel because you need that 4-on-4. I don't know. Who would be the fourth on the... Who would be the fourth with Bianca, Alexa, and Asuka?
Well, because I don't think one of Alexa or Asuka is going to play into that match. I think Alexa is going to eventually turn. The quartet that's probably going to happen for the baby faces is most likely going to be Bianca, if she's ready, and I expect her to be Becky. So you can do Bianca, Becky, Asuka, and then as much as people don't like her, they're obviously pushing her. Raquel will probably be in consideration for that role.
Do you think Shotzi's like off into the distance?
Shotzi's definitely has a strong possibility, especially since she's done War Games and she's obviously a Triple H fate.
Yeah.
Definitely. But I think if Becky's good to go, they're not denying her of that.
Yeah, and
they just are not.
And we also still don't know if it's gonna be 4 or 5, which
that too would it would help if we knew if it was 4 and 5. I agree.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Nevertheless.
Let's talk about the strap match between Drew McIntyre and Karrion Kross. This is going to be maybe a snoozer, maybe violence. I'm going to pray that they err on the side of violence, considering this is Philadelphia. And I think Karrion Kross wins because, I mean, it's odd because, like, Drew kind of has enough L's.
Yeah.
But Karrion can't lose.
No, he can't lose his first big match. And, like, that's... I don't know. Like, Drew's stock is lower than it was because, you know, he lost the big title match. And, you know, this would be a good chance for him to bounce back. But it's also not hard to make a guy if they do ultimately decide they want to go with him. I know it seems like it'd be tough to get him back after, you know, the past year or whatever. But it really wouldn't be.
No, it wouldn't.
I mean, you know.
It would not.
But yeah, kind of has to be crossed. And I think this might end up being where we see Bray, which, you know,
maybe
see how that goes, I guess. But yeah, I do wish it was, you know, the one where they touch the four corners, just because that's kind of a better way to do these sorts of matches. I know Bray and Brian had a good one that wasn't one where they touched four corners, but that also had Brian Danielson.
Exactly.
you know, so I think it'll be fine. But yeah, I think Cross kind of has to win. I don't know how much attention I'll necessarily pay to this match, but it'll be on. I don't know. You know, it depends what the baseball and football's looking like at that time, but it'll be on one of the TVs. And yeah, you know.
Yeah. let's keep it going. Edge and Finn Balor have an I Quit match. They're finally touching. I don't know where to go with this one. I'll UTL.
Yeah, there's kind of another one where it's like neither guy really should lose. Like, I guess Edge isn't hurt if he
neither
loses.
Neither guy should win, neither guy should lose.
Yeah, but he's – no, and he's not hurt if he loses. But, like, if you lose an I Quit match, it's a little different than just losing a regular match to an extent because, you know, you quit. But, like, I know he'll be fine. And, yeah, I mean, Finn probably should win, but, like – I don't know. The Judgment Day stuff isn't really hitting, and
it's getting better, and that's why I think Finn is going
to
win.
Yeah, that makes sense. They've definitely done more to make him the focal point.
Yes.
As much as people don't want to hear about it, it seems like they're building to Judgment Day against AJ and Gallows and Anderson at some point.
Well, because that's another element here. AJ could be involved
here. Yeah, he could be.
He could be involved here.
He could be involved. Ray could be involved.
Ray can be involved. This is another match where they have to also be careful with too many run-ins.
Well,
we'll say that too.
Well, I know Ray and AJ are teaming up on Raw, so
they are. Yes.
Remove them from the equation somehow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'll go with Finn. I just, you know, Edge will be fine if he says I quit, but, you know, they also will have to do quite a bit of stuff to him to get him to say it. But I think it would do job in kind of getting Judgment Day over more.
It would get a good job in getting Finn over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finn, who needs to be over and needs to be contending for world titles.
Quote unquote leader of this. And he is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Finn's got
to
win.
Exactly. He's supposed to be the leader, and yet people, you know, still kind of view Rhea in that role too.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And
she's
not. Can I throw a scenario out there for you?
Yeah.
Shoot.
Judgment Day has control of Beth Phoenix. They have Edge's wife. They're threatening to do something to Edge's wife.
Ooh, I like
Edge
that.
Edge does not say I quit.
Yes, that is maniacally evil without being offensive.
Yeah.
So no, that's good. That's that.
Even just her quitting on his behalf is a step down from that, but it's still, you know, something.
That they could do. I definitely think Rhea gets involved in this because, like, I can't see Finn quitting, and I don't see a way that Edge quits voluntarily.
Mm-hmm.
So I think whatever the finish of this match is, it's going to be creative. It's going to be good. And I trust the two dudes that are going to go out there in the ring. I'm not really into, like, oh my God, who's going to win this? I'm just watching this program for as long as it has. I'm enjoying this as a wrestling fan. I am here to be sports entertained. I think Edge and Finn Balor are going to sports entertain the hell out of us.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday. It's a 6-man tag team, good old fashioned Donnybrook match. That's a lot of words. The Brawling Brutes, that's Sheamus, Ridge Holland, and Butch, who I hope comes out as Pete Dunne, versus Imperium, Gunther, Ludwig Kaiser, and Giovanni Vinci. This is definitely an Imperium win. I'm so happy you get to see Imperium live again.
Yeah, I think Imperium should win. It's kind of weird doing it, you know, the night after they do Sheamus and Gunther again.
That's what I was going to say.
That's the only thing that could, because if they do a title switch there, then, like...
Well, they could do a title switch there, and then Imperium can win, and that's how Walter gets the third match set up.
Yeah.
Or Gunther, I should say, sorry. Name's mixed up.
It's not a bad idea. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sheamus hasn't won the Intercontinental, right?
No, he's never won it, and if he does, he'll have the ultimate Grand Slam because he'll have won everything available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, give it to him. It's not going to hurt Gunther.
No,
and you know, Imperium, I think, needs to get over as a brand more than, like, Gunther needs to have a winning streak.
Yes, right now. Yes, so, agreed.
You know, if that's an ultimate, and it's so crazy to think that, like, Sheamus is getting that kind of ultimate, you know, prize, right? The longevity that he's put in, but then also like the back half is a lot more better than the first. You know, that's definitely a credit I would give to him. It would put some shine on the Brawling Brutes. And then we can do Sheamus and Gunther again in Saudi.
Yeah.
And he'll fucking hit again because you have two big beefy men in Saudi Arabia bumping meat. I'm sure that will go over very, very well. So for the match, I'm going to choose Imperium, but I do think Sheamus wins on Friday night.
Agree. And honestly, like, the point that you just made about Imperium, that being the next step, because if you think about it, how long has Gunther been up on the main roster? 5 months?
Mm-hmm.
Almost six? I think people kind of know where he's at. The next step is to introduce Marcel and, or I should say, Ludwig and Vinci or whatever the hell.
Javon.
I keep getting my names mixed up today. I'm sorry. But yeah, they're the next cogs in the wheel, and they need to, I think they need to prove themselves pivotal, and that's how they can in this match, because this is going to be most people's big introduction to them.
Yeah.
So I think if you prove that they're assets that are worth Gunther keeping around, because he's this big hulking dude who seems like he can do anything on his own, then you're effective in how you're portraying them. So I think that's why Imperium's going to win on Saturday, title match or not, title change or not. But I would, however, change the title, give it to Sheamus, and let Gunther win another title shot basically that way by having his group beat his group up.
Yeah, well, that's fair. I can get behind that.
And I think this is your co-main, the Extreme Rules match for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Liv Morgan's defending against Ronda Rousey. I feel like I have a lot of thoughts and theories about where this is going to go. I'm not going to like expound on any of them right here because they're all cockamamie. Maybe they come true, maybe they don't. But I will say Ronda Rousey wins here.
You know, it's really weird because, like, if you told me this match was happening 2 years ago, I would wonder what the fuck happened for them to get to that point. However,
wondering what the fuck, how do we get here?
However, even in the face of a disputed finish at SummerSlam that several people online didn't like, I have loved the elements that they've added to Liv's character. I loved the segment 2 weeks ago where she jumped off the ring post and onto Lacey. I love the brawl that her and Ronda had after Ronda beat Natty in Winnipeg on Friday. They're getting her over as just this. She's like a gnat. She's never going to get away from you. She's going to be a pest, and she's going to annoy the crap out of you and also hit you pretty hard sometimes. You might wind up with a lot of gnat bites at times, but there's nothing. I mean, Liv is being portrayed as a really relentless babyface who's not going to back down from anybody, and it's working and it's effective, and that's why she's getting so popular, I think. I think that, you know, she's doing a great job. She's getting better visibly because of the reps that she's gotten, because of the confidence that they obviously have in her. I could see it going either way, but I think ultimately, I think both parties here are going to be all right, especially Liv. I think she's solidified herself. She's not just going to be a tourist anymore. She's a resident in the championship picture.
Yeah, I would agree.
If you had to make a pick, though, Ronda.
Yeah. No.
Liv's gonna do a lot of crazy shit, and it might even cost her.
Yeah.
It might be one of those things where they do like a stage dive, and they're both out, but Ronda's like arm goes over Liv, and they discover her. And then 1, 2, 3, that's it.
Yeah.
And then you get a more proper rematch whenever. And then Ronda wins and takes the belt and runs with it. So,
yeah. No, that's kind of where I was going too. Like all that stuff, you know, Liv's going to be fine. And it just feels like you give Ronda the belt back here and just go from there.
Agreed. Where are we going? That's the end, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the end.
That's the end of this pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Before we go back even further, let's at least stop last Wednesday and let's talk about whatever the fuck we saw in the middle of that eight. I haven't watched like the actual show, which was in Philly. I didn't go, but
it was at the Leah Cora Center, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It was at
Temple.
And I just haven't had like a care to watch. But I did have to go and check out Paige's return segment on the microphone last Wednesday. And she didn't say a lot, but what she said was nothing.
Yeah.
And it made me even more curious as to why in the hell she is here.
Yeah, because I mean, like, first of all, she kind of said, like, oh, you know, I'm going to go out there and talk about if I'm cleared or whatever. She didn't do that. Just, you know, and maybe she hasn't cut a promo in front of people in a while and just is rusty.
She's been doing this for how long?
Yeah, it was kind of a mess from the beginning. You know, it's not all her fault. It was structured as a mess. It was produced as a mess. Like, her content was bad.
But I mean, I'm sure she had input.
Yeah, but, like, you know, it kind of felt like a Stephanie McMahon 2015, let's bring everyone out here sort of segment. And we're past that, you know, and it just, you know, Britt got involved and they're not going in the right direction. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about the women's division, all that, but they're 3 years in now. I think this is the third anniversary Dynamite coming up this week. So, you know, 3 years in, and is the women's division better than it was 3 years ago? Yeah. No. I mean, well,
no, it's not.
The pieces are there. Some people are developing, getting better, but as a whole, is it where it should be? No.
I don't think it's better because I know the results suck.
Yeah.
3 years ago when this thing started, you have a window of opportunity to strike in and you could at least be optimistic and, you know, whatever about it. But the last 7 months have not been optimism inducing. I think it's honestly gotten worse since Thunder won the title from Britt, which is not something I expected to happen.
Yeah, no, it's gotten entirely worse. I don't think the women that they've added have added any kind of value to what they're doing already. Paige or Saraya definitely doesn't. And I'm just sitting there watching, like, for one, like you said, there's no need for, you know, having to bring all the women out on the roster and this is the future of wrestling, da 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 da. That's not needed. Because that's not the history of AEW. Yeah, AEW can use, you know, better booking week in and week out for their women, but it's never been like WWE where, like, the revolution was needed. So you needed to use those keywords that you leaned on in the Federation. You know, now you're coming over and trying to lean on those same keywords when the company you're with does not need that.
Mm-hmm.
What are you good for? What are you providing? What's different about you that's going to make me give a shit about you and make this roster stand out? Otherwise, there was no need for that segment. Secondly, Britt Baker took the words out of everyone's mouth. What?
Yeah. 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 I mean,
it's just like, they're telling and not showing. Nobody likes when you're told things and then you don't show them. Show, don't tell. Don't bring 10 women out there, much of whom have not been seen on the main television program in a really long time or never at all. And, you know, expect anyone to buy into it, especially when it seems that forced and that contrived. Saraya definitely comes off as somebody in that segment, and I think now that she's in the position that she's in, has a savior complex. It's just like the Stephanie McMahon character back then, but it's unearned because, I mean, no disrespect, she's been out of the space for 4 years, and when she was in the space, she won the title, what, like once?
Yeah.
Why is she an important figure? I know her name. I know what she's done, and if you want to be truthful about it, the cupboard is very empty compared to many of her peers.
But the thing is, like, you mentioned the savior complex. You have a savior complex, but you were a savior of what?
Yeah, exactly.
You weren't the reason that the women's division was saved. Like, yeah, you were the first one that came up out of NXT, but that division wasn't special until Charlotte, Becky, and Sasha got there. And it was very evident in how you were left away. You were left out of everything after late 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to be that way with you, because you know you had a lot of setbacks that weren't your problem, weren't your cause. With them is the breaks. It is what it is. And you having a savior complex in AEW, but you were not that person in WWE.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Also, just why am I not surprised that people were jeering when, you know, Paige pointed out how quote unquote good Tony was?
Yeah.
Boy, you really self-inflicted that one, guys.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, things improve and, you know, step in the right direction. They got a big six-woman tag this week, so that's
again, like, that, you know what, the six-woman tags, how well did those do in the summer of 2015 on main roster TV?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, so we'll see. I mean,
it's just... It's a situation where there still needs to be somebody in that room telling them, hey, don't do this. Do something else. But that is just how it goes over there.
That's just the way it is.
And frankly, I do think it's funny that she was touted as, you know, in such a way. And the reward for everybody involved was a lumberjack match.
Yeah.
Because we've never seen those before.
A lumberjack match.
Yeah, I mean, that was weird too, because, you know, they had travel issues because of the hurricane or whatever, which is fine, but don't put yourself in a position where, oh, like, this is all of our roster, but it's actually just all of our roster. It's here, but it looks like all of the roster because, you know, people had issues, and it just looks like your roster is only 10 people or whatever.
And also, you have just
an unforced error.
And going into that, the other unforced error is, where was Jade?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, she was probably down in Florida, but...
Obviously, Jade wouldn't be a part of that group. No offense.
She would not be, no.
No offense, but, like, I'm spotting, I'm looking out there, I'm like, yo, Willow Nightingale's out there, what the fuck? It lacked the star power.
It did.
It lacked what I want out of my top-tier women's division. You know, I'm sorry. Jade wouldn't be caught dead out there, even if she was not dealing with the shit in Florida.
And it hasn't helped. They haven't helped themselves with this, but it honestly, from an honest evaluation standpoint, it hasn't helped that Tony has seemingly regressed.
Yep.
She was much more charismatic than this like 2 years ago, brother. I don't know what happened there. I don't know what's going on, but there's a loss of zeal there.
Just imagine the tunes that would be sung if Daddy H would have had the reins back in December. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I don't know either, but that's just an honest evaluation of the situation. Anyways, I think we've said all that there needs to be said.
Yeah, let's go back to 2006. We're coming off of Unforgiven. John Cena is once again the WWE champion. Trish Stratus is no longer an active competitor on the WWE roster. And we're about to get one of my favorite tag teams of all time.
Yes. But first, we got some music that we need to get into. Top 5 songs at number 5 is still Give It Up To Me. Down to 4 is Crazy. Up to 3 is Buttons. And staying at 2 and 1 is London Bridge and Sexy Back. Top 5 movies, we got 4 new ones this week. Debuting at number 5, The Last Kiss. Down to 4 is The Covenant. Debuting at number 3 is Everyone's Hero. Debuting at number 2 is Black Dahlia. And debuting at number 1 is Gridiron Gang.
I've only heard of, like, those first two movies.
Yeah, I thought...
I've heard of The Covenant.
Yeah.
Okay, The Covenant. I've heard of The Covenant.
I definitely don't remember The Last Kiss, and I definitely don't remember Everyone's Hero.
Oh, yeah, what the fuck is it? Actually, no, I think I do remember Everyone's Hero. Is that the Babe Ruth comic?
Yeah.
That's oh, what God. I was
thinking. Yeah.
It is.
Yup. Didn't watch that
show. Oh, man. Wow, they have some interesting, that's an interesting cast
directed
right there.
Directed by Christopher Reeve.
Oh, wow, yeah. They got
Jake Austin, William H. Macy, Rob Reiner, Whoopi Goldberg, Raven Simone, Forrest Whitaker, Joe Torre.
Oh, my God.
Joe Torre, wow.
Monday Night Football, the Jacksonville Jaguars improved to 2-0 against the Pittsburgh Steelers with a 9-0 win thanks to 3 Josh Scobie field goals.
There was a note about this game that was in the – hold on a second. There was a note about this because the Steelers were a Super Bowl champion. They lost – let's see. It was the first shutout of a defending Super Bowl champion since 1981. They held them to 26 rushing yards.
Yeah, I don't really remember Jacksonville being that much of a problem that year, but
– And Rasheen Mathis also had 2 picks.
Yeah. So
I think Jacksonville, how did they do in 2005? They went 8-8.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, 2006. They went 8-8. So they were sort of there, but they were giving Pittsburgh a lot of fits. Because if you remember, a year later, I believe it was when Garrard had the run in the snow to beat them.
Jacksonville defensive coordinator Mike Smith.
Yes, that is correct. That is correct.
Yeah. Get into Raw from Montreal. John Cena's here and everyone's booing him. Said that he was hitting the head a lot last night. Doesn't know where he is or what time it is, but the champ is here. Everything is fine. All of his issues with Edge are in the past now. It's time for what's next, but that brings Edge out. He says it's a fluke. Cena said, you know, last night he saw something in Edge that he'd never seen before, which is hunger and fire, and he respects that. Cena says they got two options. Either, you know, Edge can shut up or they can have a rematch right now, but Edge doesn't want to have a rematch right now because Montreal's not actually Canada. Now, the crowd's mad at Edge, so.
Yeah, he said it was
not wrong.
He said it was like the snobby, like, wine and cheese eating. It was pretty fun.
Very French influence.
This isn't Edge's biggest gem as far as attacking a crowd.
Well, yeah.
But this is a pretty good one.
Cena is impressed that Edge got the crowd to hate him so quickly. And, you know, Cena says that he's just as beat up as Edge is. So they could have their rematch tonight, but Edge does not want it. He wants payback. He's got a backup plan. And it's Caden Murdock. And they attack Cena from behind. The coach says in the main event, Edge and Caden Murdock will face Cena and DX. Yeah.
So benefit of some hindsight here, knowing that this is obviously one of their last like face-to-face encounters for at least a couple of months. If this was happening in real time, do you think people would be upset that Edge would come out here, even though he was everybody's favorite? Obviously, this feud has now been going on since January. Do you think people would be upset?
Yeah,
at least in real time.
In the moment, yes, but I believe the cage match is going to be the end of it.
Yes.
Do the cage match.
I believe so. Yeah.
We'll talk about it next week, but, mm-hmm. you know, so that's good. I mean, you could have just ended it with TLC, but
yeah,
you know,
cause I was thinking as I was watching this, I was like, I know they obviously wait a year, but I wonder what happens here if they tease Orton instead of Edge.
Yeah. Well, that's the other problem. They didn't really have a top heel to come out.
That's what I'm saying. But Orton obviously comes out of Unforgiven with a big win over Carlito with a fantastic finish.
He would have been my choice. Like, if you thinking with the benefit of hindsight, the next couple of months of Cena is
mostly a lot of nothing and a lot of mixing in with SmackDown to help out.
You do the Taboo to Cyber Sunday thing. Mm-hmm. With the Big Show and Booker, and I don't even remember who the third option was. Maybe it was just him and Booker. I don't remember.
Let me see.
Survivor Series.
It's champion versus champion versus champion?
Gross. So you didn't have him doing shit until Umaga in January.
Yeah, exactly.
And I love Rated RKO, but in hindsight, yeah, Orton probably should have been the next man up because he was your next big, your heel, you know, wrestler on the Raw side.
Yeah.
You know, since Big Show's sitting over there in ECW, technically, Orton would have been the next guy. So I do think that would have went over very well. And the fact that they've never linked up would have played a big role in that.
Agreed. Yeah. And also, remember, even with Cena, he's on the Armageddon card.
Yeah,
him and Batista team up to face Booker in Finland. Mm-hmm. So they're using Cena again to boost over on SmackDown still.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, and obviously Rated RKO and DX obviously get top billing on Raw.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's fair.
It is interesting because I think that even while people were huge Edge marks on the internet, I do think that there would have been why is this happening again? He just lost this and that. Blah, blah.
Exactly.
Maybe Cena will finally lose. Blah, blah.
Like, Coach shut up a room for people to send video tributes to Vince and Shane, and Shelton comes in, does the first one, says that Vince only picked Big Show instead of Shelton to be on his team because he's black, and if Shelton was on their team, they would have won.
That obviously was not something I don't think that they really handled well, especially on commentary after.
No.
They never did, but it was just really awkward.
Umaga's in action against Kane. They start the match off by just running into each other a few times. Estrada gives Umaga a chair, but the ref grabs it before he gets squashed in the corner, so now there's no ref. And then Umaga gets the chair back, and he hits Kane with it a few times. Then the ref finally comes back in, and Kane kicks out. And then Kane gets the chair and hits Umaga with it and gets disqualified. Eventually, Umaga goes down and Kane chases Armando to the back and catches up to him. And then Umaga throws him through a wall.
Yeah. You know what? I think this was an effective monster segment.
Yeah, good.
This was good.
I had a lot of fun.
I like this.
Maria comes into the tribute room. So she's been watching Vince's DVD, but hasn't gotten to the part yet where he was Johnny Carson's sidekick or Super Bowl winning quarterback for the Chicago Bears. That's good stuff.
That's very good stuff. Flair beat Johnny Jeter. Randy Orton's here. He needed stitches in his face, but he still won his match against Carlito and Unforgiven after one of the most outrageous performances in wrestling history. He's the future of the industry and nobody can deny that, which brought out Johnny Nitro and Molina. Nitro wanted to know what his where his championship was, but he doesn't have one. He's coasting on his reputation like he's been doing for years. While Randy's been talking, Nitro's been doing. A little element of truth there, I think, which really helped this segment out just a little bit.
Yeah.
Chris Masters then came out, said he wants to be in the Intercontinental Championship chase. He believes he's the future of the business. They laughed at him because he lost to Super Crazy. Carlito came out and then Super Crazy and then Jeff Hardy all fought. And what I thought was a very fun decision to make is to do a six-pack challenge for the IC title. And that's what wound up happening here.
Yeah. And I mean, it was an okay match.
I love the ending.
Yeah.
The ending is really fun.
You know, everyone kind of does their stuff. And then Chris Masters gets swan-tonged and Nitro throws Jeff out of the ring. And then, pins Masters to finish it. So, you know.
I will say shout out to them for letting Super Crazy do that wild moonsault on all of them on the outside. But yes. That was cool. Yeah. Let him get his shit in too.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Chris Masters got pinned again.
He did.
Candace defeated Lita with help from Mickey. And then it's time for Edge and Cade Murdoch against John Cena and DX. And after a few minutes, Shawn Michaels gets a chair and uses it, which is a strange thing for a babyface to do, especially when two of the other guys are Cade and Murdoch.
Well, yeah, but look what happened last week.
Yeah.
I mean, they deserve some repercussions for helping to beat the shit out of them in the parking lot.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like you could have had one of Cade or Murdoch take a pin to either of these three guys. Why are you protecting them?
Well, because they're probably about to be raw. Well, no, they're not.
No, that's the thing.
Well, I see both sides of the point.
Yeah.
I see the side where DX after Hell in a Cell, they can stand to get a little more violent.
Yeah.
Have a little bit more of an edge to them.
It's fair.
I get it, though. I totally get it.
Yeah, that was Raw. So it's on to ECW from Worcester.
Where the SmackDown season premiere is this week.
Yes.
Good relevant content there.
Paul Heyman greets Booker and Charmel. They are the guests tonight, so he's taking them around and showing them everything. But first, we have a six-man tag between Sabu, Tommy Dreamer, and the Sandman against Mike Knox, Test, and Matt Stryker, which is not Extreme Rules. Crowd would like tables because, you have these guys in the ring. Why wouldn't you want tables? And then Test gets disqualified for pushing the ref. So not only is it not Extreme Rules, but he gets a weak-ass DQ. So ECW is not doing great.
No.
Kevin Thorne defeats Balls Mahoney. Paul Heyman's still taking Booker and Charmel around. They come across CM Punk, and he hopes that someday he can compete against Booker, which will happen
in March.
So we got that going for him.
And a WrestleMania, technically. They're both in the same match.
Punk beats Shannon Morgan. At some point, he would like to face people who are actually good.
Yes. Booker and Charmel came across Rob Van Dam, who says he would love to face Booker tonight. King Booker said that he'll face RVD tonight. He says, how about Extreme Rules?
Yeah.
So renewal of a rivalry here that stems back to an earlier part of the Ruthless Aggression era.
Mm-hmm.
2004, 2 years ago.
Yeah. So we get into that match, and RVD sets up the chair in the corner, and Booker catapults him through it, which looked pretty bad.
Jesus.
RVD hit the frog splash later in the match, but before he could make the pin, Hardcore Holly came out, hit the Alabama Slam, and then Booker hit the scissors kick for the win. So that was ECW.
Indeed. And on September 22nd, 2006, I just wanted to make note of this before we talk about SmackDown from Montreal. Barry Bonds hit his 733rd career home run, tying Hank Aaron for the NL record. It took place in Milwaukee, the same city where Aaron played the first half of his career with the Braves and, of course, finished it with the Brewers.
No. That's right. I'm sitting here like, wait a minute. What do you mean National League record? That I forgot he did play for the Brewers, and at the time the Brewers.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Which means that he would have ended his career as a designated hitter, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
I mean, he always should have gotten it right, but hey.
So move to SmackDown, September 22nd from Montreal. Teddy Long's on the phone to start the show talking about how SmackDown is on the CW now. Season premiere on the CW. Gets interrupted by Booker and Charmel. Booker does not want to wrestle someone like Vito because he's royalty and he doesn't need to do that. And Teddy Long says that Vito already withdrew himself from the match. It's fine. And Booker will instead go one-on-one with The Undertaker. So.
Is that the first recorded?
Yeah, you know.
So that statement also, I'd just like to point out, because it was brought up with the CW. I don't know why this has been stuck in my mind ever since it happened. Probably because I watched it too many times at my grandmother's house. But I just remember the one promo before the CW came to be about. The one thing that I remember about it was the fact that it was Here I Come by Fergie was the theme song for it.
Oh, yeah.
Was the song in the promotional advertisements. No idea if anyone out there is listening and remembers that commercial, please tweet me if you read this, if you listen to this, rather.
Yeah.
Because that's the one thing that I remember from that ad campaign, and I guess it worked.
Yeah, there you go. So we opened with Bobby Lashley and Batista against Finlay and Regal. Really fun match.
That physical. Was really fun, yeah.
Lashley spears Regal for the win. Really solid opener. Matt Hardy and Gregory Helms are wrestling each other again. Matt wins with a low blow this week while Helms tried to take off the turnbuckle cover. Last week, Helms hit a low blow, and so it's a little turnabout situation. Miz is going to continue his undefeated streak tonight, so that'll be fun. Jimmy Wang Yang was going to debut this week in Montreal, but the people there talk funny. Okay. Good bit. Miz defeats Funaki, so he does keep rolling.
Yes.
Ray says nothing in his career has affected him as much as Vicky and Chavo the past couple months, and he hopes to finish things against Chavo once and for all tonight. So they have a match, and they both just kind of brawl through the crowd and around the ring. And
let me just say this, Ray, if you think this is the thing that will affect you most in your wrestling career, just wait about 16 years.
Yeah, it's true.
Very fair. Very fair.
Yeah, so they're probably going to do a cage match or something at some point with these two.
I believe they do.
Maryse shows up to welcome everyone back to SmackDown. They're in Montreal, so, you know, she's going to be around now, I guess. I don't know what she's going to do, but, you know.
I think, well, eventually she does become a wrestler. And a very, to be fair for her, for the era, very good Divas champion.
Yeah.
In 2008. Very good Divas champion.
Yeah, Maryse is a good man. She can't really wrestle anymore, but
That's fine. She can be a great personality.
Exactly. It's always nice when she shows up. She's very good at it.
Yeah.
London and Kendrick defend the tag titles against the Pitbulls and Idol Stevens, Casey James, and a lot of action there. And Noble wins with a roll up, so they retain their titles. Or
Noble rolls.
Yeah, he went to roll them up. Went to roll London flipped them over.
Exactly. I always like that finish. It's always cool.
So Vaughn defeated Tatanka to get the big hometown win.
Man, good for him.
Crowd loved him.
Good for him. Genuinely good for him. He's eaten a lot of shit this year. Yeah. Good for him for this night. I hope he was happy this night. Because he should have been.
I agree. John Cena finds Teddy Long backstage. He thanks him for, you know, giving him SmackDown to fall back on in case he didn't beat Edge. And says that he owes him a favor. And Teddy would like to cash in that favor right now. Next week, what if John comes back and teams with Lashley and Batista against Booker and Regal and Finlay? John agrees, and he's going to be on SmackDown next week.
I guess that this, well, it's because it's weird, I guess, because Kurt obviously went to ECW, but I guess this is their way of covering that hole.
Yeah.
Because they are hurting, I guess, in the star department.
Yeah, that's true.
Might as well have him work double duty if he's willing to do it.
Exactly.
Fair play. All right, so move to The Undertaker versus King Booker. Mr. Kennedy, who will face The Undertaker at No Mercy, is on commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And after being unable to put away The Undertaker, Booker hit a low blow in front of the ref for the DQ. He ran to the back, Lashley threw him back in the ring, sat up, Taker hit the tombstone, and that's the end of the show.
Yes.
Not a bad way for things to go. All right. So if we keep going on here, let's see if there was anything notable in the college football world. Let's see, any big upsets or anything of this. So Notre Dame, obviously, they lost last week, last time we talked. The new number two team in the country is Auburn, who beat Buffalo 38-7. USC's number three. They beat Arizona 20-3. Got West Virginia in the top five. They're number four, beating East Carolina 27-10. Florida beat Kentucky. Michigan, let's see. Michigan beat Wisconsin. Let's see. Georgia just edged Colorado 14-13. If that happened now, there'd be some problems. But also, speaking of Notre Dame, they beat Michigan State 40-37. On the 40th anniversary of the game of the century, they came back from a 17-point deficit to beat the Spartans in East Lansing. So yep. A big win for the Golden Domers after taking a fall. But aside from that, there wasn't too much. Boston College got beaten by NC State. Boston College was ranked 20th. I don't know if the game was in Raleigh, but if it was, they were probably favored anyway, so I don't know how much of an upset that would have been. But yeah, that's mostly it for college ball. Let's see if there is anything for the NFL that's worth talking about.
There is. Chicago Bears improved to 3-0 with a 19-16 win over the Minnesota Vikings, featuring a 24-yard touchdown to Rashid Davis with a minute 53 to play.
It was the only offensive touchdown in a game dominated by defense.
Yes.
What a fucking ball game that was. most of the mid-2000s Bears wins are all blurs because they kind of blend together. If you've seen one, you've seen them all.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean,
Rex Grossman attempted 41 passes.
Yeah,
kind of amazing they won, to be honest with you.
The pivotal games stick out for reasons, right? Like, you remember, obviously, the Cardinal game, which we'll talk about soon. You remember the Bronco game the next year when Hester returned those two kicks. You remember some Giants games here and there because he had, like little moments, right? Yeah. But there will be, like, random games between the Bears and the Vikings or the Bears and the Lions or when the 49ers came to town and they stunk.
Mm-hmm.
They all run together because it was really just like, oh, yeah, no, the defense is really fucking good.
Yeah. Elsewhere in the NFL, what do we got here?
Got the Panthers beating the Bucks for their first win of the season. But this game was remembered for what happened afterwards because Chris Sims needed an emergency spleen removal surgery and a blood transfusion.
Oh.
Yeah. Let's see what else. The Seahawks were up 35-0 in the second quarter on the New York Giants, but the Giants had a ridiculous fourth quarter comeback attempt, but they still managed to survive 42-30. Matt Hasselbeck had 5 touchdown passes, tied a career high.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
When Matt Hasselbeck versus Eli, what did he?
Yes, say? It's not a bad. That's not a bad matchup for the NFC in the mid-2000s.
No, let's see. Eli had
a young Eli and Matt.
Yeah, very young Eli. This is third season in the second. He has a full starter, I believe, too.
He had 3 touchdowns and 3 interceptions.
Mm, sounds about right.
Yeah, that's an Eli Manning start right there.
Also. Looking across the board here, the Bills had 475 yards of total offense, but still lost to the Jets 28-21 because they committed 3 turnovers and went 0-for-3 on fourth down conversions. Not ideal. Also, Peyton Manning had his first rushing touchdown since 2002 as the Colts beat the Jaguars 21-14. Terrence Wilkins had an 82-yard punt return for a touchdown for Indianapolis as well.
Yes.
So
Baltimore beat Cleveland on a field goal.
Yes, they did.
15-14.
And they sacked Charlie Fry 7 times. Matt Stover had the game-winning field goal, 52 yards. The Rams beat the Cardinals 16-14. Kurt Warner threw 3 picks, fumbled a snap in Rams territory with 2 minutes left, and after the Rams fumbled inside their own 20. And Javon Walker caught touchdown passes of 32 and 83 yards as the Broncos beat the Patriots 17-7.
Yes. Okay, we can get into the movies here.
Music
first. A lot of movement in the top 5. Lips of an Angel by Hinder into the top 5 at 5. London Bridge down to 4. Too Little Too Late debuts at number 3. Moneymaker debuts at number 2. And Sexy Back stays number 1.
I forgot to mention this, and I will just cut in. September 18th, 2006, you might remember that as the day that the Dodgers hit back-to-back-to-back-to-back home runs to tie the Padres and then won because Nomar hit a 2-run homer in the 10th.
Yeah.
Yep.
I do remember that. Most of them were off Trevor Hoffman. I think all the first 4 were off Trevor Hoffman and then Nomar. Yeah. Top 5 movies. Everyone's Hero falls to 5. Black Dahlia falls to 4. Fly Boys debuts at 3. Gridiron Gang drops to 2. And Jackass number 2 debuts at number 1. So, yeah.
There you go.
TNA, No Surrender, 2006. Not going to go through the whole card, but they have Kurt Angle now.
They do have Kurt Angle.
More into that next week.
Yes, they do.
And then on Monday Night Football, The New Orleans Saints returned to the Superdome, picked up a 23-3 victory over the Atlanta Falcons. Obviously, big game.
Big game. Green Day and U2 in the pregame concert.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, the Saints were never losing that game.
No.
Ever. Not in any universe are they losing that game. From
the start, that they were just different and it felt different. And the Falcons were rattled from the jump, and then the Steve Gleason play happens. And
yeah, it's like 3 minutes in, right?
90 seconds in.
Yeah.
Very, you know, at the first drive, it was 3 and out, and then that happened. Yeah, that was a very special season. Obviously, for the Saints, they went all the way to the NFC Championship game where they lost to the Bears, got blown the fuck out. But, hey, what were they, 13-3 that year?
The
Saints, yes. Yeah, they were. Yes, they were. Yeah. They were. Well, it was either 13-3 or 11-5. For whatever reason, those two numbers stick out at me.
For some reason, we had the tiebreaker either way. But
You're right. They were yet. Actually, 2006, they went 10-6.
Oh, okay.
Oh, 10-6. So how the hell did they get a bye?
I guess the rest of the NFC was terrible.
Yeah, because the Seahawks were.
Did we really have a fluke year that year?
The Seahawks were 9-7. Or no, they weren't 9-7 that year. They were 9-7.
Let me see. 06, 07, it was the Bears who were the one seed. The Saints were the two. The Eagles were the three. The Seahawks were the four. And the Cowboys and the Giants were the 5-6.
Yeah, okay.
So were the Eagles 9-7 too?
Let me see.
Yeah, what did the Eagles do?
Damn.
Yeah, I think they were 9-7.
They were the Eagles were 10-6. The Cowboys were 9-7, and the Giants were 8-8. They were 8-8. The Panthers were 8-8. I guess the Giants had a tiebreaker over them. The Packers went 8-8. The Rams went 8-8. I remember that because that was they made a big fuss.
Oh yeah.
The year that the Rams made it back to the playoffs or went back to a winning record or whatever, because that was the last time they had one. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the NFC was dog doo doo. The 49ers were 7-9, and that was like the seventh or eighth best record in the conference.
Like their best record. That was like their best year for a 10-year period.
Yeah. So get into Raw here from the Ford Center, Oklahoma City. They do the intro and the pyro, and then the lights don't come back on. So. Power's out at the moment. they kind of are stalling, trying to fill time, and then the lights still don't come back on. So they do Lita against Candice in the opener of the women's title tournament that they're doing. And Lita gets the win because Edge is a special ref, and he spears Candice, and John Cena comes out and fights with Edge. Just, whole mess. Then we come back from the break, and the lights are on now. So Cena says Edge is so scared of him that he knocked out the power to the entire building trying to get away from him.
That's good shit.
Edge is leaving to go celebrate with Lita, so he doesn't have time for Cena's nonsense tonight. But Cena riles him up by saying some stuff about Lita, and
she said
that she's tired of him doing it every week.
And, I don't blame him. Yeah. I don't blame her for saying that.
The entire locker room is better than John, and even she's better than John. He says he could beat Lita with one hand tied behind his back, and Edge accepts the challenge on her behalf. And Coach makes it a match for later tonight. So we got Cena and Lita.
Asked me this question, who would be watching this instead of Saints Falcons?
Yeah.
I don't know, because even I was watching Saints Falcons that night.
Yeah, that's bad. Kane's in action against Johnny Nitro for the Intercontinental Championship again. Umaga is banned from ringside. And then kind of midway through the match, Umaga comes out anyway and hits Kane with a chair disqualification. So that's going to keep going. DX is hanging out in the back. Maria wants to know what they think about facing three teams tonight, because DX is a little gauntlet they got to go through. And Triple H says Coach will learn there's no stopping DX, just like Vince and Big Show and Shane learned that.
They're on the move.
Coach is upset with Shelton for saying that he got overlooked because he's black, and he should have talked to Coach about that first. Shelton kind of reiterates it that, you know, he's being held back because he's black. And then Coach says that Shelton never capitalizes on his opportunities, and tonight he can have another one and face Jeff Hardy. So maybe Shelton can finally turn things around here.
Yeah, hopefully so.
Coach also says that Edge and Cena are facing off next week in a cage, but tonight's match with Lita is no holds barred, but Edge is not allowed to touch Cena or he'll lose the cage match next week. A lot of stipulations for no real reason, but we'll get there. Ric Flair defeats Mikey, so he's beaten the Spirit Squad one by one. I wonder what they're building to.
Yes, I wonder.
DX Tag Gauntlet. So the first team out is the Highlanders, and DX kind of does some comedy with them, and then Sean hits Sweet Chin Music on the one to get the win after like 15 seconds. Next team is Visser and Charlie Haas, and it goes back and forth for a little bit, and then Triple H hits the pedigree on Viscera or on Charlie Haas, and then Shawn hits the sweet chin music on Viscera, so he falls right on top of Haas, and they just pin him like that. And then it's Caden Murdoch with the last one, and they just all end up attacking each other with chairs.
You got me with that one.
Yeah.
Jeff beat Shelton Benjamin with an inside cradle. Kind of wish they got a little more time for this one, but yeah, it's fine.
Super Crazy and Carlito are teaming up against Chris Masters and Randy Orton. I wonder which one of them will pin Chris Masters this week. And it ends up being Carlito, who then gets RKO'd after. So they're doing something with Orton and Carlito still.
Yep. Coach is in the ring. He introduced Eric Bischoff, who has a new book coming out, Controversy Creates Cash. And Raw would not exist without him, and Nitro, and DX wouldn't exist without the NWO, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it seems like they're building to something.
All I remember at this point in time was that people were suggesting that there was going to be a new NWO and that it was either going to be him, Bischoff, or him, Orton, and Edge, or that they were going to turn Cena. Neither of which happened.
I don't remember that, but I do remember the segment. I do remember being very, like, because that can't happen if there's nothing leading to it. It's not really just to push the damn book, right? Yeah. And it really was just to push the book.
I mean, yeah, it really was.
That stuff was still hot then, and it's a good book. I mean, it's easy to forget now because we hear from Bischoff, you know, every day, it seems like.
Oh, of course.
Like, you know, you used to not be able to hear from these guys whenever you picked up, you know, your phone or whatever. So it was a good book. But yeah. So we moved to John Cena against Lita. Cena gets his arm tied behind his back, but hits the FU after like a minute. But then Booker and Regal and Finlay come out and beat him up because he's only got one arm and he can't fight back.
Yeah.
And obviously Batista and Lashley aren't there. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Good babyface in peril stuff.
Yes.
Good stuff there.
That was Raw.
One thing before we move forward, because I'm seeing it now. Later this week, Dallas Cowboys wide receiver Terrell Owens denied a Dallas police report that he tried to commit suicide on Tuesday night. He said his hospitalization was due to an allergic reaction to the pain reliever hydrocodone.
I remember that.
I remember this.
Now
whole
that we've got
thing.
The lens, like 16 years later, the particulars are blurred to me because it's been so long. But 16 years later, I don't understand how that could be reported.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember either. I remember the initial report dropping on ESPN News, I want to say. It was late Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
I was up late because, of course, I was up late. And I just remember that, and I was like, what the hell? And then I just remember the whole fallout. I remember the press conference, the however many million reasons why he's glad to be alive or something like that. I don't know how that gets reported either.
Yeah.
But that's... Yeah.
It's something that someone definitely wanted out there.
Oh, 100%. Somebody wanted that out there at that point in time.
Yeah. So
there's only probably like two suspects there, yeah. I think. One is the coach, one is the owner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, move on to ECW from Tulsa. JR is their special guest tonight, so he's here, you know.
Oh. Gee, I wonder what's going to happen now.
He's always liked ECW and all that. And, you know, Matt Stryker comes out and makes fun of him. And then Sandman, Kane, Stryker, and JR hits him with a cane, too.
Well, at least
a lot of fun.
At least they did something positive.
Yeah.
It's JR in Oklahoma. Too many bad memories.
Well, yeah.
Other things happening.
Hardcore Holly is ready to show RVD what Extreme really is because they're about to have an Extreme Rules match. And Hardcore Holly was not kidding.
No, he was not.
They set up a table at ringside and Hardcore Holly suplexes RVD from the apron through the table, but also cuts up his entire back as he goes through the table. So rest of the match, he's just got a giant gash in his back and bleeding quite a bit. RVD does the chair drop kick thing in the corner. You know, Hardcore Holly goes to hit RVD with the chair later, and RVD kicks it into his face and hits frog splash for the win. Probably the best Hardcore Holly match, which is crazy because he worked there for 15 years. But yeah, just really good match. One of the best ECW matches we've seen so far.
And, yes.
Was looking forward to it for the past few weeks. I'm glad we finally got there. You know, CM Punk, addicted to competition, wants to compete with the best and brightest. And he wants to start facing, you know, Big Show and Sabu instead of people he's been facing. Kelly Kelly interrupts him, says that in 2 weeks they're going to be playing extreme strip poker, and if Punk wants to join, you know, that'd be a lot of fun. And you know, she can't get into casinos, so she's not very good at poker, so maybe he could help. And Mike Knox comes in and whisks her away. So Punk wants to face good people. He's going to end up facing Mike Knox, it seems.
You know? It's going to be your problem for 16 years, Punk.
Ariel picks up a win against
fucking children, Punk.
It's true. Ariel picks up a win against Francine.
I mean, it's literally true because she's a fucking child.
No, it is true. Yeah, they should probably not go out of their way to say that she's 19 like they do, but
you know, yeah. This era.
Yeah. Big Show and Paul Heyman are discussing the Sandman, and Big Show should be careful against him tonight, but Big Show doesn't care. Sandman can even use the cane if he wants to. So we get into that match, and Sandman gets a few cane shots in, and Big Show gets busted open, but then eventually the cane ends up outside the ring, and Matt Stryker gets it. Big Show drops a leg for the win. Too much Matt Stryker on this show, but overall, not bad for ECW.
No, not bad. This is one of their best, better efforts, I would say.
Yes. And leading into SmackDown, we get a report from the Torch that JBL almost quit as color commentator because he's got too much shit going on, which I don't remember hearing about at the time, but makes a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense. I don't remember hearing about this at all either.
Ultimately, just had to work it out because they didn't have anyone else that could be color commentator. So,
correct.
It would have been interesting, I guess. I don't know. They moved Taz back over, have him do both shows, but JBL's sticking around, so.
Indeed. And before we dissect into SmackDown, there are two college football results because they started playing some big midweek games here or later week games. Second-ranked Auburn defeated South Carolina 24-17 on Thursday night. Also, BYU ended TCU's 13-game winning streak by beating the 17th-ranked Horned Frogs 31-17. And also on Friday, Rutgers defeated South Florida 22-20. It was the Scarlet Knights' first stay in the national rankings since 1976, nearly ended, but they had to overcome a halftime deficit and did, and stopped a USF two-point conversion attempt with 15 seconds left that would have tied the game. So Rutgers is moving on up.
Yep.
Probably be hearing about them again in a few weeks.
Yeah. We get to SmackDown, also from Tulsa. John Cena's here to open the show.
A lot of super shows.
Yeah, there have been. It's good to be back on SmackDown. You know, this time on Raw has been pretty good. He's champion again. He's got a new movie coming out. And then basically just works the crowd for 10 minutes. Says he'll be back out for the main event. He's fine. Rey Mysterio is in action. It's supposed to be against Sylvester Turquay, but Elijah Burke subs in. Rey gets the win anyway, but Sylvester Turquay beats him up after. So I guess we're doing Rey against Sylvester Turquay. I don't know who that's for, but
I don't know who that's for.
You know. The Teacher's Pets defeat the Pit Bulls to become number one contenders for the tag titles because they only have three teams on this show. Kid Cash gets fired after the show for attitude problems, so he will not be around anymore. Who knows what that means for Jamie Noble. Just Incredible also got released this week, so
yes,
he will not be around anymore either.
Correct. Chavo wrestles Matt Hardy. Gregory Helms distracted the referee. Chavo hit a low blow and DDT on Matt. Before the Frog Splash for the victory, Helms came in, hit a Shining Wizard on Matt. King Kennedy does a mock funeral for The Undertaker, and it ended with lightning striking in the ring. Well, how that goes.
Yeah.
Miz beat Tatanka, so he is still rolling. Jimmy Wang Yang makes his debut. However, he loses to Sovan. Not sure why.
No.
I gave Sovan credit last week. That was because they were in Quebec.
Yeah, you shouldn't have.
They're in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Don't beat the new guy. It's a little weird.
Teddy Long announces that SmackDown assigned MVP. They have a whole press conference and everything, so we'll get to MVP soon. And then it's time for the main event.
A big six-man tag match.
John Cena versus Bobby Lashley versus Batista, or, you know, those three on the same side, against Booker T, William Regal, and Finlay.
And you wanted to see this match a lot. You were telling me when we were going to Duncan the other day.
Yeah, I specifically remember talking about it at school and stuff. This is one that everyone was fired up for back then. One that I've been looking forward to for quite some time. Also, Lashley and Booker will be in Pick Your Poison matches next week, so those are fun.
Well, that's a stipulation I wish that they would bring back.
Yeah. First half of the match is going to build into a Cena hot tag, which they end up getting, and then Hornswoggle gives Finlay a shillelagh, and they get Cena in the arm with it to continue selling the arm. And then it turns into kind of a spectacle for Lashley. Batista's not really involved a whole ton in this one, but, you know, Booker goes for a scissors kick on Batista later, but Lashley, who is a legal man, spears him and gets the win. And then Edge comes out and spears Cena to end the show. So, you know, you're building to No Mercy with Lashley and Batista, or Lashley and Booker. You're building to the cage match on Raw and doing a good job building to multiple stuff there. So, yeah, that was SmackDown.
Yeah, I think they're doing a really good job on, you know, at least getting us to this pay-per-view, even if we don't necessarily want to see, you know, like Cena, you know, on SmackDown. I kind of want SmackDown to kind of do its own thing. I think SmackDown's kind of rolling along. The players are doing, have, are in comfortable positions. When you talk about Booker, Batista, Lashley, I mean, up until they move Lashley, at least at this point, I was very high on where Lashley's going.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm staying within that for at least the next 2 months until they move him. But
yeah, again, it's clear they're high on him. And it just, I don't know if it's collateral, like he has to go to ECW because they have no one else. And that's just what did him in. And, you know, the good news is it ultimately worked out for him. It just took, you know, 15 years. But, you know.
Yeah. King of the Ring.
Cena.
Yeah, probably Cena. He was on every show.
I like that.
Yeah.
We'll give it to Big John. Let's go. We got Monday Night Football and a 62 Chase to watch. I am at Cameron Santa. Rob's at Robin O'Neill 31. Chris is at Chris Ab Novak. At BarbersChairNet on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook.com/BarbersChairDigital. Enjoy Extreme Rules if you're in Philadelphia for it. If you're coming down the Turnpike or, you know, wherever you're coming from, holler. And then, as always, man, rate us, give us 5 stars wherever you're listening, subscribe if you are not, leave us a review, thebcnnet.com for all of our shit. If you miss anything, just go there, you can just all find it there. I'm Pierce for Rob and Chris. We'll see you guys after Extreme Rules. Take care.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.